Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to INWIT First Half 2017 Financial Results Conference Call. Michele Vitale, Head of Investor Relations, will introduce the event.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Our CEO, Mr. Oscar Cecchetti, and our CFO, Mr. Rafael Perrino, will provide you with an update of our first half 2017 operating and financial performance. The presentation will be followed by a Q&A session. Please take note of our disclaimer policy that you should now see on slide two. Let me highlight that the reported data refer to the financial statement at June 30, 2017. Let's go through the presentation in detail, starting with slide three, where you can see that INWIT is continuing along its path of growth, diversification, and efficiency. All our action to extract more value from the asset we own and to enrich our portfolio with new asset and services allow us to confirm our low teens plan target. Moving to the result, as you can see in this quick overview, first half results see us on the right track. Both the operating and financial result we set for the future of the company have been delivered. The tenancy ratio increased to 1.78 times, and revenue grew by 5% compared with the first half of last year. The efficiency plan is in line with our expectation, as shown by the 5.8% year-over-year lease cost reduction. The investment program is being deployed in line with the plan, following our strict double-digit IRR policy. As a result, the EBITDA trend is once again double-digit, and in this first half, the year-over-year growth is 13.7%. Now, I leave the floor to Mr. Oscar Cecchetti, who will guide you through the main highlight of our first half 2017 result. Later, Mr. Rafael Perrino will provide you with an in-depth analysis of our year-to-date financial result. As usual, the presentation will be followed by a Q&A session. I will now hand over to Oscar.
Thank you, Michele, and good afternoon, everybody. As usual, let's start talking about revenues. As you can see on slide five, the total first half 2017 revenues account for euro 173.8 million and continued to increase by approximately 5% on a year-on-year basis. This result was driven by the three main components of revenues. Revenues from the master service agreement with TIM for the sites inherited through the IPO increased by 2%, as laid down in the contract. Let me remind you that from 2018 onward, the escalator will be 100% of the CPI, while for the 2017, it was predefined at 2%. Second, revenues from approximately 180 new sites amounted to 1.8 million. Revenues from other operators that are also proceeding along the double-digit growth path totaled 43 million, showing a 14.4% increase versus first half 2016 and +38.9% versus first half 2015 pro forma. Hence, total revenues grew by almost 9 million euro in one year, equivalent to 5% versus last year and more than 10% versus two years ago. Moving to slide six, let me show how we achieved these results. On the left of the slide, the graph shows the trend of new sites and new tenants. As for the evolution of all tenants, we reached 9,000 tenants by adding 600 tenants in 6 months. As for the sites portfolio, in the last 6 months, 30 sites have been newly built, and about 200 have either been completely dismantled or are being dismantled. On the right-hand side, you can see that the tenancy ratio increased further to 1.78, confirming our 10% growth rate per year. Thanks to the above-mentioned results, the average revenues per site increased from 27.3 thousand at the time of the IPO to 31.9 thousand euro this first half of 2017, growing by 17.1% since we went public. Now let's continue with the second key feature of our story, the efficiency plan. Even cost-wise, the trend is quite positive. On slide 7, you have an overview of the efficiencies achieved in operating expenses. The total OPEX amount to 83.2 million, with a reduction of 2 million versus the first half 2016 figures, and roughly 6 million compared with the first half 2015 pro forma figures. By breaking down OPEX numbers, the chart shows that ground lease costs decreased by another 5.8% compared to those of the first half of 2016, although the new sites lease contracts negatively impacted the result for about 1 million. Personnel costs grew slightly, mainly to the headcount step up, and other operating expenses that also include accruals continue to be in the area of 6-7% of the total revenues. Let's now move forward to slide 8 and focus on ground lease costs. The main drivers of the lease cost reduction continue to be the commissioning of sites, renegotiation of lease contracts, and the acquisition of lands. The decommissioning plan is performing as expected, even though we decided to maintain a limited number of sites to seize the concrete opportunity to market them to other customers. As of today, we already dismantled 49% of the total target. Moving to the renegotiation of contracts, this first half we renegotiated the lease contracts of approximately 400 sites, reaching 52% of the addressable target. Lastly, considering both land acquisition and long-term right of usage of rooftops, this first half remained basically in line with expectation. We reached 38% of the overall target, having grown 5 percentage points this last quarter only. So we consider our 2018 target of 1,300 sites achievable. These three results together bring about a solid trend on ground lease cost reduction that is illustrated on the right side of the slide. The average lease cost now account for 12.6 thousand per site, compared with 14.5 thousand at the time of the IPO. With slide 9, I'd like to recap what we envisaged for each project of the acceleration plan and show you the current stage of the development. Regarding the new sites forecast for 2018, we proceed as expected, and in fact, about 79% of the projects are in progress. This result represents an upside of more than 10 percentage points versus last quarter, and we are fully confident to reach our 500 sites target by the end of 2018. Moving to small cell, 41% of the 2018 target is in progress. Here we have increased the number of projects in progress by 4 percentage points versus last quarter. And finally, let me talk about fiber backhauling. Here the takeoff has been more complicated than expected, as several operational issues had to be addressed. This quarter we have made a first jump of more than 4 percentage points versus last quarter, reaching 15% of the project in progress, with 3% either ready or under construction. Now let me spend just a few words on the potential enlargement of the tower cost business portfolio in the evolution from 4 to 5G. The first slide, I have two slides on those topics. The first slide, slide number 10, is on 5G. 5G means many things, but it really mainly means networks delivering a long list of new capabilities to provide customers with a whole new set of services. Here on the left, you have the list of the main capabilities that are expected to be delivered on the mobile networks. Peak rate of 10 gigabit per second, 1 millisecond of latency, 1 million connected objects, and 10 terabit per second of data traffic per square kilometer. While on the right, you can see the key technologies needed to step up for the performance. In a few words, skipping boring details on technologies, the new architectures will require more spectrum, new hardware, but above all new software in the core, and many more radio access nodes. This translates in a new challenging investment plan for mobile operators. On the other hand, use cases and business models to extract value from the new network performances have not been identified yet, and the data monetization is likely to remain one of the most relevant issues that should be addressed by the mobile network operators. Taking all this into account, the operators' willingness to share infrastructure and network components should increase, and this opens up new opportunities for the tower cost. In the next slide, slide number 11, two of the opportunities offered by the 5G scenario to the tower industry are illustrated. The first and more obvious step will be the need for network densification. The extreme performance levels required by 5G in terms of data throughput will require the use of millimeter waves and small cell. Operators are starting to use them today, and in a few years, their use will grow to reach, in a fully deployed 5G scenario, at least 1 to 10 ratio versus the number of macro cells. I'm talking about several hundreds of thousands of small cells. Given this massive deployment, there will be significant room for a neutral host business model, and it's reasonable to assume that tower operators can get a relevant share of this market by offering turnkey small cell as a service solution. At the bottom of the slide, we highlighted another trend that in a later stage could translate into new services and new opportunities for tower costs. In the transition from 4 to 5G, networks will become software-defined, and many of the network functionalities will be virtualized in the core, and the edge of the network will be significantly simplified. In parallel, applications and content servers are expected to move towards the edge of the network. The reason is very simple. If you consider that the degree of latency will be key for many services, such as autonomous driving, the distance between users and content will be of paramount importance. In other words, the reduced radio latency delivered by the network must be translated into a reduced application latency. This means that cache and protocol acceleration servers will be positioned in the major base station. And this will require a small server farm, a sort of tower data center, that could be shared among operators, and why not, provided by tower costs. Summarizing, we can say that 5G is still uncertain in terms of timing, technological aspects, use cases. Yet we can rest assured that it will have a positive material impact for tower operators, especially those that have strong relationship with mobile operators and recognized skills and capabilities. Now I leave the floor to Rafael for talking about numbers.
Thank you, Oscar, and good evening to you all. First of all, on slide 13, let's review the main KPIs of the first half of 2017. Revenues stand at 173.8 million euro, and with OPEX at 83.2 million euro, we have an EBITDA of 90.6 million euro. And during these 6 months, we have made investments for 14.7 million. In the first half of 2017, net income amounted to 59.1 million. Analyzing this data in more detail, we have a good top line performance with a revenue increase of 5.4% versus the first half of 2016. And in terms of EBITDA, we posted a robust increase of 13.7% versus the first half of 2016. Let me highlight that despite our business enlargement, our costs are constantly decreasing, and in particular, let me focus on the OPEX components. The lease cost fell by 5.8% year on year with a 4.2 million reduction. Personal costs increased by 0.7 million euro year on year, mainly due to the increase in the headcount dedicated to new businesses. Other costs increased by another 1.5 million year on year. So, as I already said, total OPEX decreased by 2 million, equivalent to a 2.3% decline. As expected, net financial interest for the period amounted to 1.8 million euro, perfectly aligned to what we registered in the first half of 2016. During these 6 months, P&L taxes stood at 23.6 million. So our net income for the period equaled 59.1 million, increasing by 21.6% compared to first half 2016. Moving to slide 14, we find our history in terms of main economics achieved. As you can see, our EBITDA kept growing constantly. We have gone from 34.9 million in 2Q15 to 46.3 million in 2Q17. And also our EBITDA margin has always been increasing, moving from 42.9% in the full year 14 pro forma to 52.1% in the first half of 2017. All these results are due to our strong commercial efforts for both our traditional business and for new technologies that drive us from 79 million euro in revenues in 2Q15 to 87.4 million in the second quarter of 2017. And to our attention to cost savings that allowed us to account OPEX for 44 million euro in 2Q15 and finally arrive to 41 million euro in 2Q17. Lastly, it is evident how the EBITDA margin is highly correlated with the tenancy ratio that has always grown during our equity story, moving from 1.55 times in full year 14 pro forma to 1.78 times in actual first half 17, and increasing 10% every year. As a result, in the first half of 2017, we achieved an EBITDA margin that is higher than 52%. On slide 15, you can see a drill down of the first half of 2017 net income of 59.1 million euro. That grew by 21.6% when compared with the first half 2016. This increase mainly comes from a 5.4% increase in revenues and a 2.3% decrease in total operating expenses, leading to a 52.1% EBITDA margin. Our EBIT margin amounts to 48.7%, a best-in-class result. Concerning taxes and interest charges, as the slides shows, we have 23.6 million euro of taxes carried in the six-month period with an implicit tax rate of 28.7% and interest charges equal to 1.8 million euro. Net income for the first 6 months of 2017 stood at 59.1 million euro, equal to 20.1 euro cent per share on an annual basis, and up 23.3% compared with the first half 2016. Now, let me show you the cash flow at June 30, 2017. We are on slide 16. The CapEx rollout is in line with our investment plan. In the first 6 months of 2017, we invested 14.7 million euro, of which 13.8 million euro dedicated to our expansion activities, such as land acquisition, new sites, and small cells. 0.9 million of ordinary CapEx. This quarter, our EBITDA minus CAPEX amounts to 75.9 million euro. Moreover, in this first half, we reported a 5.5 million euro negative variation of net working capital, which was primarily due to seasonal swing in commercial working capital, cash advance on lease cost, and the Brescia project second installment. Moreover, here is the 4.7 million euro taxes cash out, mainly due to the payment of a final tranche of 2015 taxes, while the majority of the taxes will be paid in the second half of 2017, as highlighted in the slide. Finally, we delivered a positive cash flow to equity amounting to 64.9 million euro, reminding you that we distributed more than 88 million euros in dividends, equivalent of roughly 15 cents per share. On slide 17, we provide an overview of our balance sheet at June 30, 2017. At the end of June, net debt amounted to 57.6 million euro. The current situation leads to a net debt on annualized EBITDA ratio of about 0.3 times. Lastly, the fully distributed reserves at quarter end equaled 676 million euro, corresponding to approximately 1.1 euro per share.
Oscar, Rafael, thank you. And now we can open the Q&A session.
The Q&A session is now open. You can register for your question by dialing star followed by 1. To cancel reservation, dial star followed by 2. Thank you. So today's question comes from Mr. Max Gilbert of New Street Research. Mr. Gilbert, please.
Hi, thank you very much for the question. So I guess I'm just interested in seeing what's the conversion time for small cell to go from requested through to ready or under construction. And then secondly, my other question is around your land acquisitions. So at the moment, it looks like the run rate's improved in Q2 up to 70 sites. But in order to meet your midpoint of your FY18 guidance of 1,400 sites, this would imply you need to do around about 145 sites per quarter here on. I mean, are you still comfortable that you can meet this target? And, you know, if not, how should we think about this going forward? Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Let's start from small cell. the time required to move from, let's say, an opportunity pointed out to the small cell on air is very variable. There are small cell where, for instance, we are deploying two kind of small cell, monooperator small cell and multi-tenant small cell with different technology. In the first, the process is shorter because, of course, we start from a specific, need of the operator that want to have the small cell in a specific position. And here we have simply to look for the location, have the relationship with the landlord, building up the small civil infrastructure and providing energy. And so we can have a process that could last from 3 to 6 months. With regards to the distributed antenna system, the process is quite complicated. It's more complicated because we have first to figure out the opportunity, then to reach the agreement with the landlord. And usually in this installation, we need a specified location for the what we call a BTS hotel, for the room that has to host the operators and our centralized equipment. And second, in both cases, mono and multi-tenant, we have to provide fiber. So usually for the distributed antenna system, from the, the first prospect to the project on air, we can move from 6 to 12 months. Having said that, and considering that we have 41% of the total target already in our hands, because in some cases those small cells are under construction, but many of them are already on air, and the remaining are or under negotiation with the landlord and the operator, or are requested, so we have already the areas to position the small cell, and we are simply looking for establishing the relationship with the landlord. So having said that, we have 31% of the total target in our hands. We feel confident to accomplish with our objective to deliver 4,000 small cell for the end of 2018.
Just to clarify on that point, what exactly is the mix in your target at the moment between multi-tenant and mono-tenant?
We didn't disclose the gap because, of course, the problem is that if you consider all the 41%, that means more than 1,500, remote unit to be located, is uncertain if they are mono or pluri, because it depends on the desire, the willingness of the location owner. In many cases, we start with mono, but then the location owner wants to have multi-tenant. In principle, we have to check the interest of the operators to have the small cell in that area. So in many cases, we start from pluri and transform in mono because we didn't get the real demand from the other operators. So this is the reason why we didn't communicate yet the mix. I think that as soon as we can say the real number of cell already on air and generating revenues, you could have the split. But let me remind you that in any case, being them mono or being them multi, the revenues and investment relation is ensuring us to get a 10% IRR. So let me move on land acquisition. You're right. The land acquisition plan, we are at low than 40% of the target. We continue to feel confident. Now, here, what we reported is the amount of contracts signed, so of the transaction completed with the landlord. So we have, in addition to what we already signed, we have the funnel, the prospects. So all the negotiation, the let's say the negotiation, the relationship that has been started with the landlord for the acquisition, and the number of them, many of them are promising. The other could be not promising, but in principle we had a funnel, and looking at this funnel, we continue to say to believe that our target of 1,300 either lands or long-term right of usage could be achievable. But you're right, we have to deliver more in the next quarters.
Okay, and you remain comfortable with this this guidance for FY18?
We remain confident with the 1.3, 1.5 thousand land acquired for the end of 2018, yes.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for your time.
Next question comes from Mr. Ricard Boada of Morgan Stanley. Mr. Boada, please.
Hi, congratulations on the results, everyone. Just a very quick question here. I know that we've talked this in the, about this in the past, but can you, or what's your read across on the Crown Castle acquisition this week of Light Tower? This is the third deal that they had so far in the space, and clearly, if you're you're investing in small cells, this can be like an interesting opportunity for you as well. And then the other thing is, we saw this month that Arqiva, the UK broadcaster and tower operator, acquired spectrum in a high bandwidth band. Is it something that you would be looking to do as well a few years out in a 5G world?
Thank you. This is a very interesting question. So I believe that the different steps of Crown Castle in the small cell business model are very interesting, because they confirm that we are on the right track, that small cell are coming, and tower costs can take advantage from this trend. So this is something that is confirming our strategy. The second part of your question is our interest on fiber and spectrum. Let me start from fiber. If we consider the current stage, the targets that we have for our small cell are concentrated in the cities, in the areas where there is, in the crowded area, where we have a lot of, we have either offices, building offices, or let's say concentration of users and traffic. So usually in those areas, there is plenty of fiber. And so we, in any project, we find several alternatives to buy fiber. We find the Telecom Italia fiber, but also the utility fiber. So for the time being, doesn't make any sense to look for investment in companies, in fiber companies in Italy and at the current stage. The second is spectrum. Even in that case, we are not interested in spectrum, because of course what we are seeing is that the small cell, being them mono operator or multi operator, in any case, they will use the frequency, the spectrum resources owned by the operator. So in case of mono tenant, we put on air exactly the frequency of the operator. In case of multi-tenant, we put together the frequencies owned by the different operator, and we put them on air through the small cell, the distributed antenna system. So in that, for this reason, we are not interested in spectrum.
Just as a follow-up on the fiber side, if I understand it correctly, you essentially the whole argument, I think that we've also like discussed this in previous earnings call, not to pursue a deal like on the fiber space is essentially in the cities you already have a lot of like fiber or like opportunities to resell fiber. As 5G moves along and goes into like a tier two cities, does that then like make sense to like buy fiber assets, which maybe like have like a nationwide backbone or are in tier two cities?
In principle, I would say no, because if you consider the process of advanced LTE, so the 4.5G and the 5G is going from the big centers, will go from the big centers to the minor cities. But in parallel to that, in Italy, we have a lot of projects for fiber that are going to do in the same direction. So we have the project for the, now the fiber is already fully available in the big cities, but in the main cities, but taking into account the plans of Telecom Italia and even the alternative operators, the fiber is going to be, let's say, laid also in the other cities. So considering those two trends in parallel, we continue to believe that in our project we will be dealing with alternative to get fiber. So for the time being, it doesn't make any sense to look for a large investment in fiber providers.
And sorry, as a final follow-up, given that, I mean, essentially, like, your model is quite like, so like, the infrastructure model or infrastructure economics on the wholesale side versus the ownership or, like, the economics of owning the infrastructure are quite different. Would it make sense for you to act as co-investors in the fiber deployment, at least on the backhaul side? Could it make sense?
I think that you have to consider that in the small cell deployment, we usually buy fiber through IRU, and this is very this has a lot of economic sense because of course we buy what we need, not more. In case of tower, in many cases, let's say that could be useful and accretive to lay the last portion of the cable to be shared among the operators and to prevent other fiber providers, because in that case we can bundle the hosting on the tower with the final, let's say, enlacement of fiber. So in case of small cell, again, taking into account where we are deploying small cell, now it seems to us that the best way, of course, we will be dealing case by case, but it seems to us, for the experience that we had up to now, it seems to us that the best way to get fiber is to buy IRU by putting in competition the different fiber provider.
Great, thanks so much.
Next question comes from Mr. Parishaw, Bank of America. Mr. Shah, please.
Thank you both, and congratulations on the results. I've just got one question. Obviously, there's been some movement at the Telecom Italia level, and we've all been reading about it in the press, and that Fabrica Italia has decided to leave. We obviously don't know who the replacement would be. There's some speculation around Amos Genish maybe coming in. I was just wondering, is there any real change for INWIT from the perspective of the change in management at the Telecom Italia level? Thanks.
Listen, the answer is very simple. Of course, Telecom Italia is our controlling shareholder, is one of our main shareholders. We will continue to pursue our strategy, our objective with our view, and of course, taking into account the interest of all the shareholders. So having said that, I do not expect any special, but of course, never say never.
Thank you, Pari.
Hello?
Next question comes from Mr. Simon Coles of Barclays. Mr. Coles, please.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the question. I was just wondering, have you seen any change in appetite from various operators as we've seen the number of new sites in progress increase quite a lot this quarter? And then on lease cost reductions, we saw small acceleration in those reductions this quarter compared to last quarter. Is that just because last quarter was quite light, as you didn't acquire as many land leases as potentially you would have liked? And then I guess you've had a lot of questions on 5G, but if you could just explain how you feel you guys are positioning yourselves for a 5G world in the future and how you can provide services to telcos, that'd be very interesting. And if you could elaborate on the data center point you made on the slide, that would be very useful. Thank you.
So the first question was about the ground lease cost. Of course, the quarter per quarter dynamic could be different. In principle, the total results includes different trend. If you look at slide number 7, you see that we have the discount on lease contract with TIM that we achieved last year. Then we have the efficiency on ground lease cost achieved through renegotiation, land acquisition. And here you have to consider that all those are minus, but we have a plus that is ground lease cost for the new sites built up. As I was telling you in my presentation, the new sites that we have been built up from the beginning of our IPO now account for around something less than 1 million of additional lease cost. So all in all, considering minuses and plus, we are achieving this efficiency. The second was on 5G. Am I wrong?
No, yeah, on 5G and how you're positioning.
Listen, in the 5G, I do believe that you have to follow what's going on. So there are two possibilities for a TowerCo. The first is to be focused on real estate, on infrastructure, and just taking advantage from the position, the asset, the long-term contracts. The second option, that for me is an option value, is to look for opportunities in this path, because it's an evolution, it's a gradual evolution from 4 to 5G. So now, I continue to say that taking into account the uncertainties already existing on use cases, uncertainties that are present in the figures in the investment plan, I do believe that the operator are already and will consider in the future the possibility to share, to save money, to share. So for this reason, I do believe that the opportunity for the outsourcer of telcos, of mobile operator, to provide not only infrastructure, but also additional shared services, it's real and concrete. And we have an example. We have the first example is given by the small cell. So Now, what we are seeing in the US with Crown Castle, but even in Europe, even Italy, with our, small numbers of small cell, what we are seeing is that the operators are willing to save money, to outsource, to spin off problem issues, and to get, a small cell as a service solution. I feel confident that in the path from 4 to 5G, this will generate additional opportunity. The second that I mentioned in my presentation was about the tower data center. This is a trend that starts to be clear to the operator. If you give a glance at the presentation of the operators, the so-called mobile edge computing, so bringing intelligence, the parallel two paths of the intelligence. One is concentration through the virtualization and the simplification of the radio access nodes. The other is the proliferation of cache server. So the cache server, for sure will go close to the tower core, because the content and apps must to go closer to the end user. And for these reasons, I do believe that TowerCo, that at the beginning of the story were just civil infrastructure, start to be something more complicated. And it's absolutely reasonable to expect for the years to come that in the main TowerCo, in the main towers, we will have this sort of tower server farm, tower data center, that could be again installed by the operators or provided by third parties. If the operators accept to have the server farm offered by a neutral third parties, they can save money. And for the data center facility, you know that the outsourcing, the sharing, is already well known and common among operators. I don't know if I properly answered your question.
No, it makes sense and I agree. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Mr. Fabio Pavan of Mediobanca. Mr. Pavan, please.
Yes, hi, and thank you for taking my two questions. The first one, again for you, Oscar. I think the updates on 5G and small cell are very interesting. If I understood well, it seems that regardless consolidation, you are expecting an increase of speed up in terms of sharing agreement among the biggest operators involved in the street. I'm referring to mobile operators, but not only to the guys. And the second question is on numbers, which came out admittedly quite strong and above expectation on both top line and cost reduction. I've seen you have confirmed your guidance, but I was wondering if it could be fair to say that at least for the existing year, the guidance may have some upside risk. Thank you.
Upside opportunities, not risk. So let me say that, yes, Fabio, I believe that the sharing attitude continue to evolve. You know the operators, you know that they have their own, network deployment plans. In principle, they want to keep to maintain all the network assets that can give competitive advantage. But as we are seeing, I remember that when Telecom Italia started with the first sharing in 2004, I remember that at that time all the mobile operators were absolutely not willing to share. So the trend of sharing, we are already been living with it in the towers. And for this reason, I feel confident that this sharing attitude will continue to increase. Because of the constraints that the operator have to deal with, because they have, as I was telling you and as very clear to you, they continue to have to invest in spectrum technologies. They continue to have the nightmare of data monetization. And for these reasons, I believe that the sharing attitude will continue. And I mentioned in some meetings with investors that there is in a white paper delivered by GSMA, the Association of the Operators, is stated that it could be possible to envisage that in the future just one 5G network could be built up and all the operators will be using the same network. So this is in the extreme of the possibilities, but what is interesting, that has not been written down by an analyst, a futurologist, but by the Association of the Operators. The second is about the guidance. No, we confirm our guidance. We are getting better results. We hope to continue to maintain the guidance, even to beat the expectation if we can allow to do that. But we maintain our guidance, Fabio.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Mr. Tangier of Kempen. Mr. Tangier, please.
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. First of all, you seem to experience an acceleration in the progress of the business acceleration plan. However, I think we all fail to see the related CapEx expenses in the cash flow statement. Could this be because is there a timing effect in the payments you make on the actual CapEx? And as such, could we expect higher CapEx outflows in Q3 and Q4? And then the second question I have is that you indicated that fiber backhauling progress was going slower than expected, but can you please give us some more detail on the underlying reasons of why this deployment is going slower? Thank you.
Thank you. The first answer is yes. In the next quarters, we will see, let's say, an acceleration in CapEx, because when I was talking about the trends on our acceleration plan, and I presented the situation in terms of progress, so let's say, no, this is not, is this one, okay. And I say that we have 79, 41, 15% of project in progress. You can imagine that the CapEx is accounted when the construction is ended. So as soon as the macro tower, remote unit, or backhauling has been ultimated by the firms, we accounted the CapEx. So for these reasons, you are right. In the next quarters, we will see an acceleration in the accounted CapEx. The second is just a bit complicated, because the difficulty that we have dealing with the backhauling are different. The first is, let's say, internal issues in terms of building up the team, getting the right skills, designing the processes, because of course the process of designing a fiber backhauling are completely different from a project for building up a new tower. Different counterparts, different engineering issues. So the first are internal procedures. Second is that when we find assets available to be acquired and to be offered to the operator, we have to check the quality of the fiber. Now you know that the operators want to get the last technology of fiber. Third, it's for the operators, we have different interfaces. So I talked with Vodafone about tower and hosting contract, but the counterpart for fiber is completely different. So we have to deal with guys that are in a different department, that follow different logics. So all this, let's say, is what we paid in terms of delay. Now, taking into account that we have around 150 projects in our hands, so that we have our, let's say, 50 projects ready with the cable designed, we continue to feel confident to be able to deliver 1,000 connections at the end of 2018.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Mr. Eric Ernst from Credit Suisse. Mr. Ernst, please.
Yeah, thanks very much. I was just wondering if do you already generate any revenues from the small cells you've built out? And then I was a bit curious about the discussion earlier on mono versus multi-tenancy on small cells. I think you said you, I don't know if you had or if you thought you, there might be some small cells or remote units where you expected multi-tenants, which would then just be mono, and how that works in terms of the revenue per remote unit. I guess there's a higher rate for mono tenants, but if it's not on, if it's not one tenant who've ordered a remote unit, can you still charge a higher rate? And why do you think that there won't be demand for these remote units? Is it the price, or if you could just elaborate a little bit on that? Thanks very much.
Thank you for this question. The, as I was trying to explain, the process and the choice between mono and multi is case by case and is complicated. Of course, it depends on the, let's say, the location, the attitude of the landlord. In principle, talking about prices, we continue to see that our forecast to have an average of 5,000 per year per remote unit seems to be the right price for in any case. So having said that, I do believe as I for the multi-tenant usually we always look for at least two tenants. Usually we don't start a project if we don't feel confident to get new tenant, to get two tenants at least. In some cases we take the risk because we feel confident that in few weeks or months the second tenant comes, but in principle we don't start without feeling confident about the first two tenants. So all the economics that we included in our business plan for average capex, average revenues, and let's say the IRD, the double digit IRR, are confirmed. Our experience is confirming. You see in the slide that we have 10% of the target, so this means 400 small cell under construction. If we refer to July, a relevant number of them are already on air.
Okay, and the small cells are on our generating on average 5,000 a year in revenues. Is that correct?
This is exactly there is variance, but the average is around 5,000.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Next question comes from Mr. Fernando Cordero, Bank of Santander. Mr. Cordero, please.
Hello, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my two questions. The first one is related as well on the sharing mode of the MNOs, but not just thinking on 5G, but also thinking on all technologies, and at which extent are you foreseeing any kind of opportunity of managing all technology networks from the MNOs present in your market. We have started to see some examples in other markets, and just interested to know if there is any kind of opportunity in your market. This is the first question, and the second question is regarding the new entrants in the Italian mobile market, and at which extent your comments in previous questions regarding the potential relationship with the new entrant have changed, or you are maintaining the same message that you have shared in previous calls regarding the opportunity for you from the new entrant. Thank you.
Let's start from the second, because it's quite simple. Of course, we have relationship with the new entrant. We continue to be, they are moving, they are looking at potential opportunities for contracts. I continue to believe that, let's say, that the plan of the new entrant could be clear enough as soon as the remedy structure delivered by Wind Dutch become more clear. You know that in the remedies.
Yes, I understand your point.
So I think that before this, I think that as soon as these continue to be, let's say, options, it's not clear what they are looking for. Once they have the remedy structure, at that point, we can investigate and try to understand their real strategy. They continue to see that the they want to invest, they want to create their network. I do continue to believe that they will start with virtual operation, but that's it. I think that it's continued to be too early to talk about it extensively. The second is a very, I left the first part of your question for the final, for the end of my answer, because it's very, very interesting. So, the logical path is the following. Operators will be more and more willing to share. This is the assumption, of course. Second, third parties, natural outsourcer of the operators, could be the natural counterpart for this. Now, I think that it's up to the third party, it's up to the TowerCo to pinpoint the right opportunities. Because, of course, let's say, the operators could be interested in common maintenance services. I would never be interested in it. It's completely different from the typical business structure of the tower operator, because it's a business, the maintenance services, is business with, let's say, 10, in the best case, 10% of EBITDA margin. So, but in the potential services shared among them, I think that we can point out some relevant opportunities very close in terms of business model, business logic to the infrastructures, what is aim EBITDA, the same, let's say, cash generation, capex intensity. At that point, I think that we can take those opportunities, not every opportunities, but the opportunity that are closer to the business model of the tower operators.
I see your point. Thank you.
The last today's question comes from Ms. Carola Baldelli of Deutsche Bank. Ms. Baldelli, please.
Yes, good afternoon. Congratulations also from my side for the results. And a couple of admin questions on CAPEX. So to follow up on the previous question, so do you think a figure in the region of 90 million is okay for full year 17, and then going to something like 130 in 18, and then falling down to something like 50 in 19 could be a correct path, considering that everybody was a little bit low in the first in this quarter on CAPEX. And then following up on the question on Iliad, my main problem is on timing. So you said that they want to roll out their own network, but the question is, should they probably need to roll out pretty soon, considering that they will probably launch in Rome and Milan first, which probably can't be done on roaming because the wind network is already quite congested, I think. So the question is, do you think that they could, for example, launch a 25 giga offer or unlimited giga offer just on roaming, or do they need towers in the main cities, either for your, from yourselves, tower operators, or rolling them out themselves? And then, you know, the last question with regards to Invit is when can do you think you will have the opportunity to buy some towers from the merged entity?
Thank you, Carola. Even in that case, I prefer to start from the second. So I think that the Iliad plan are not yet clear. So it's up to them to decide where and when, using let's say their own network facility. I heard that they could be launching services in Milano and Roma. Perhaps if they, as soon as they are ready to discuss about concrete projects on our tower, we are here. This is a clear message that we always delivered. So I do believe that sooner or later they will come. I continue to believe that as soon as they come, they will be cherry picking towers. For the time, I continue to believe that before, let's say, planning their network, either in the big cities or nationwide, they have to put in the map the real towers, RAN sharing offered and offered by Wind Dutch and accepted by them. So just after, if I were them, what, only having, let's say, the plan of those towers on the map, they can start the radio project. So this is the reason why I do believe that they are that this process is taking time. I believe that the structure of remedies sooner or later will be clear to everybody, and for this reason, we are, as I always say, we are ready to answer their questions. So as soon as they come, we are absolutely willing to offer our towers to them. The first question is simple.
Sorry, Oscar, just to understand, when you speak about structure of remedies, you mean how many of the 5,000 towers they can buy, they will buy, how many of the 3,000 they can collocate, they will collocate? In that respect, you speak of structure of remedies.
Carola, just a bit different. In the structure of remedies, there is just the numbers. In order to deploy a radio project, they need to understand which towers will be transferred, will be available. And so it seems to me that this is not clear yet. So once they have this, so case by case, tower by tower, where they are located, they can start by deploying the radio project and say, okay, I need a tower in this area. Who is the best provider? Is Inwit? Is Galata? Is Vodafone? I can build my own, whatever. But in principle, I think that the clear structure of remedies, not the numbers, the clear structure should be clear before they start.
Yeah.
The first part of your question is simple. We do not have a target for this year. We confirmed the target of the 300 million. And so, let's say, having said that, you can make the math, but of course we do not have the target for this year.
Okay, thank you. Now, the conclusion that I seem to imply that Iliad is very, very late, so they it's unlikely that they can launch anytime soon or come anytime soon to either you or Cellnex, no? From what you're saying. So they're considering going on roaming only.
I don't know. I let's say, without having additional information, I said from the beginning the possibility for them to launch the virtual formula, the operations, it seems to be very logical. But of course, it's up to them. Then you refer to the potential buy of the asset from Wind Dutch, no? Okay, this opportunity continue to be one of the most interesting in the market. I know you know that Wind and Dutch are completely absorbed by the merge and by the network rollout, because they decided to replace all the network equipment. Having said that, there is a new CEO, there is a new top management. We discussed many times about the reason why we consider this is a good opportunity for the tower industry, but this is a good opportunity especially for INWIT, because taking into account that the potential deal, should it come, we in competition with Cellnex, we can offer, let's say, much more opportunities for synergies, because we have their equipment just on less than 2,000 of our towers. And so, having said that, I can that this deal continue to be a very, very present in our radar screen.
Okay, that's very clear. In terms of timing, it's again related to everybody who's so late, so probably something more like in 2019 rather than positioned in 2018.
I don't know. I had relationship with Maximo, with Ibarra, and he always said, look, I will start considering other different from merge and replacement in 2018. Now, we have a new CEO, and we have to understand what he will be doing.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carola. Thank you.
Thank you. This was the last question. Thank you for joining us and for your interest in our conference call, where we presented another good set of results, which I hope you appreciated. Thank you again. Have a great evening.
And good vacation to everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is over. Thank you for calling.